Welcome back to the Bob Davis Podcasts. In podcast 457, the latest scare tactic against Donald J. Trump, who is running for the nomination on the Republican side in 2016. Get ready and take a deep breath. Are you ready? Donald Trump supporters are authoritarians. We're going to talk about that in podcast 457. Well, we are sub-zero in the upper Midwest. I'm already coming down with something. Everybody is coming down with something. People are driving slow. Cold weather is a bitch. There's just not, especially when it's below zero for any length of time. It was 15, 16 below last night where I live. And this is the kind of weather that creates really severe plumbing problems. Now, there's things you can do. I'm going to go, for example, right now, because I'm thinking of it, I'm going to do it right now. You ready? One of the things you got to do when you have below zero is you got to make sure that you have a stream of water, small stream of water, running in your bathroom, especially in the basement, because it helps keep the pipes running. But here's the thing with cold weather. If you're out of town or something, you can have broken pipes, all kinds of problems. For emergency service, don't forget Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul, 651-224-4771. In Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. Check them out online at ryanplumbing.com. It tells you all about what they do. They do residential and especially business. Sometimes the business stuff is potentially really important. And Ryan Plumbing and Heating takes care of a lot of businesses and a lot of business emergencies. Once again, 651-224-4771 in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. For four generations, quality replacement and repair of all plumbing, heating, and air conditioning systems, residential and business, Ryan Plumbing and Heating. All right, I guess I'll go turn this off because I had it on just for the spot. But as soon as I'm done with this podcast, I'm going to turn this back on. But I'll go turn it off for now. All right, let's get back to authoritarianism. Well, I have to say this every time. I have to say this. To begin with, I am not a Donald Trump supporter. My political philosophy is simple. I always tell people what it is so you know where I'm coming from because I don't want to be covert. I don't want people to think that I'm trying to convince you of something because I support a particular candidate because I don't. I have come to believe that government is, in fact, the problem. It's not a problem. It's the problem that plagues our society. And there aren't many candidates who really believe that government is, in fact, the problem. And there aren't any candidates who will do anything about the burgeoning and dangerous power of government in our country if they get elected. I don't care if they're Republicans or Democrats. Just about least of all, Donald Trump. With that disclaimer out of the way, one of the things that is so amusing about this election cycle is the lengths to which media, academia, and political operators will go to covertly support a candidate or political philosophy. In other words, they'll write an article, they'll go on a TV show, they'll make a speech, they'll do some kind of a video, and they won't tell you what their philosophy of government is or who they work for, but they'll advocate for a candidate. You see this a lot on the right with establishment, covert supporters talking about how Jeb's going to come back or how Marco Rubio's going to win the nomination, which may happen. I'm not saying it won't, but you'll see it with these people who are quietly and in the background openly advocating for a particular candidate. They just don't say that they're doing that. The latest bag of steaming crap is from self-described PhD candidate Matthew McWilliams. Now, here's what it's all about. Writing in Politico, McWilliams claims to have uncovered the one weird trait that predicts whether you're a Trump supporter. And that one weird trait is being an authoritarian. Now, that sounds bad, right? Who wants to be an authoritarian? You don't even want to be an authoritarian in your own home. What is an authoritarian? Well, this is interesting. I did some research this afternoon in recording this podcast. There are a couple of definitions, so I'm going to give you the most objective one that I found first. Here is a full definition of an authoritarian: of relating to or favoring blind submission to authority. Of relating to or favoring a concentration of power in a leader or an elite not constitutionally responsible to the people. And now a little bit more appropriate to our conversation definition. Political scientists use the term authoritarianism to describe a way of governing that values order and control over personal freedom. A government run by authoritarianism is usually headed by a dictator. Now, I'm going to put this definition aside because I want to come back to this. But Matt McWilliams, PhD candidate at the University of Massachusetts, is a self-described PhD candidate, as I said, and he is writing his dissertation on, oddly enough, authoritarianism. He says, I found a single statistically significant variable that predicts whether a voter supports Trump, and it's not race, income, or education levels. It's, surprisingly enough, authoritarianism. The statistically significant variable, according to McWilliams, is that Donald J. Trump is supported by people with authoritarian inclinations. This isn't a conclusion drawn from statistical analysis so much as I can tell is a conclusion drawn from a series of questions asked in a poll, a nationwide poll of 1,800 people. Don't even get me started about these polls that are statistically shaky. 1,800 nationwide is all right. It's not great. Then those responses are put through some sort of simple statistical analysis, which could be anything. It could be just simply a spreadsheet, or it could be a factor analysis or something. It's hard to tell. We will probably have to wait for the dissertation to find out what those questions were, how they were asked, and what the statistical analysis, as simple as it may have been, actually was. Now, to be fair to McWilliams, he also says Democrats who support Hillary Clinton over Bernie Sanders exhibit authoritarian tendencies, but, and it's a big but, they are most pronounced among people who support Trump in this election cycle. The other factor among supporters of Trump is fear of terrorism, although not as significant as this thing called authoritarianism or authoritarian tendencies. So let's take a look at this authoritarian issue first. Now, here's the thing. In my opinion, I think this is a politically correct way or a safe way to call somebody a fascist. We all know now that when you go to Hitler in any argument, you've already lost the argument. And the left has already gone Hitler on Trump. So where do they go from here? Well, I'll tell you where they go. They go authoritarian, because in this way, you can discuss the potential for Donald Trump and his supporters, especially his supporters, to don black uniforms and parade around in jackboots, and how awful it is for America, spelled A-M-E-R-I-K-A, that we have reached the point where people just want an authoritarian to tell them what to do, right? So you can just imagine yourself sitting on the arm of a couch talking to a rapt listener, especially if it's a female, telling them that authoritarianism and authoritarian principles and ideas are really the problem. And Donald Trump, I just read this article that says Donald Trump is really supported by these authoritarian people. And this also supports the idea, even if it isn't statistically significant, that blue-collar, high-school-educated mouth breathers are the only ones who support Trump, these stupid people beyond the pale. So we're talking about the stupid people in, the Quad Cities, and we're talking about the stupid people in Duluth and Montana and places like that, where we would never be talking about the stupid people right around the corner in Brooklyn or in Massachusetts, in Boston, or someplace like that. You just say about somebody, oh, well, you know, he's an authoritarian and doesn't even know it, right? And you don't know what it is either, but it sounds good. And no one will ever ask you at one of these parties. They'll just ask for more white wine and brie. They won't say, well, what exactly do you mean by what is an authoritarian? You say that at a party, and people are going to say, really? They're going to be interested in what you have to say. So absent the kind of label that you need, what does an authoritarian government actually look like? Where does it come from? How does it come about? And what do you look for? Well, for example, you can't have fascism until the conditions for fascism have been met. What is fascism? Oh, look, here's a convenient and yet incorrect definition of fascism, which pops up first when you do a Google search for fascism. Fascism is defined as an authoritarian and nationalistic right-wing system of government and social organization. To the untrained eye, if you go out and stand in front of an American flag and talk about American values and say we need to fix this, then you must be a fascist, right? It is usually, well, the final definition part of it is extreme right wing, wrong, authoritarian, or intolerant views or practice. So that's the other definition of fascism. Here's a little less biased definition of fascism. A political philosophy, movement, or regime that exalts nation and often race above the individual and that stands for a centralized autocratic government headed by a dictatorial leader, severe economic and social regimentation, and forcible suppression of opposition. Do you hear Donald Trump supporters voicing that kind of idea? Do you hear Donald Trump voicing those kinds of ideas? Maybe, maybe not. It's also a tendency toward or actual exercise of strong autocratic or dictatorial control. Another one I've heard is that fascism is a system where all the power of the state is consolidated and focused on one goal. Fascism is often incorrectly described as a right-wing type of movement, but it doesn't have to come from the right wing. In the two formerly fascist countries we're most familiar with, Italy and Germany, fascism emerged as a third way between socialism, communism, and capitalism. The conservatives in the Weimar Republic in Germany, described as a semi-presidential republic, wanted to continue with the republic. The communists and socialists wanted something else, and the Nazis emerged as an alternative to the more left-wing communist and socialist ideas. Same thing in Italy, essentially, where fascism first emerged. It was also an alternative to right-wing ideas. And I hate to quote Wikipedia, but this is a good explanation of the political orientation of fascism in Italy. Italian fascism promoted a corporatist economic system whereby employer and employee syndicates are linked together in associations to collectively represent the nation's economic producers and work alongside the state to set national economic policy. This economic system is intended to resolve class conflict through collaboration between the classes. Now, Italian fascism opposed liberalism, but rather than seeking a reactionary restoration of the pre-French revolutionary world, which it considered to have been flawed, it had a forward-looking direction. It was opposed to Marxist socialism, but it was also opposed to the reactionary conservatism at the time in Italy. It believed the success of Italian nationalism required respect for tradition and a clear sense of shared past among the Italian people, alongside commitment to a modernized Italy, in a sense, making the trains run on time. Mussolini was a fascist. And he was also a socialist. He started out his political life as a socialist advocate, and he was raised by socialists. What about Latin American fascists like Juan Perón? Well, Argentina's fascist-looking Perón came to power through a coup. His economic policies seemed to focus on eliminating poverty. His two goals when he became president in the mid-1940s in Argentina were social justice and economic independence. It doesn't sound very conservative or right-wing, does it? And it wasn't. Of course, if you've read your Hayek, you know that the conditions for fascism have to first be met before it can emerge. What does that mean? Well, it means political power has to be consolidated in the state and usually in the executive branch first, which is usually what happens under socialism. So Hayek viewed socialism as a precursor to fascism, and of course communists view socialism as a precursor to pure collectivism, where the state owns the means of production and property. Now, English progressives at the turn of the 20th century and American progressives at the turn of the 21st century both advocate consolidation of power in the hands of the government, usually a single party like the Democrats in the case of progressives, or the executive branch to quote-unquote just get things done. How many of you have heard progressives bemoan the existence of state governments that get in the way of being able to help people and get and fix things, and local sheriffs and counties and district courts that get in the way of somebody actually fixing things that need to be fixed. And the government is the solution to fix these things. If we could just have people who really know what they're doing in Washington, the elite technocrats, reach out and fix things, everything would be okay, right? And it would be okay because technically the government is democratically elected. Okay? So what do they advocate? Government control of the means of production through regulation. Who supports that? Well, let's take a look at single-payer healthcare. This is the control of the healthcare industry and the insurance industry. Who supports that? federal intervention with local governments to solve problems, whether it's Common Core with the school boards or Agenda 21 with city councils, intervention through the federal courts with local sheriffs, and so forth. Who supports that? A rule from Washington by fiat, executive order if necessary, by the president through the use of executive orders to order outcomes, which should be worked out through the messy democratic political process, but it takes too long. It doesn't matter if it's immigration or gun control or defining marriage. We don't want to necessarily have someone work that out through the messy legislative process. We want this done. So this is why we want majorities. Who supports that? Statism in any form is essentially authoritarian, regardless of which part of the political spectrum supports it. But there's an awful lot of statist-oriented type things that are being advocated on the left. You know, the thought occurs to me that I'm really looking forward to going out and actually meeting some of these so-called authoritarian Donald Trump supporters in Mobile Podcast Command, because very, very soon I'm going to be heading down to Iowa to cover the caucuses down in Iowa. And Trump is all over Iowa, as are all of the other candidates. And I will be driving the 2000 Ford Super Duty diesel ambulance. And I got it from ex-government trucks. The ex-government trucks Mega Truck Center is now open in Forest Lake, Minnesota at 356 19th Street. They've got Ford, Chevy, Dodge, Toyotas, and more. You can drive right through, kind of snake through the lot and see what is available. So we're talking about work trucks, vans, SUVs, and more. I know I've seen a couple of great expeditions that Ed got from the FBI, which are super clean. So really, whatever you need. And the idea of going out and spending tens of thousands of dollars for a brand new SUV when you get one of these super cool fleet maintained former government trucks is, I just don't understand why anyone would do it. And don't forget the 3-day peace of mind guarantee. You buy with confidence at X Government Trucks. And they also want me to tell everybody again and again and again that X Government Trucks takes trades. They pay the highest values every day without a bunch of bull. xgovernmenttrucks.com in Forest Lake at 356 19th Street, or you can call 763-777-8782. Let's do the bullhorn.
xgovernmenttrucks.com.
What of the authoritarianism detected by Matthew McWilliams' poll of Donald Trump supporters? So that you can go into the party and you can say, these Donald Trump supporters, they're authoritarians. Well, if you accept the Trump supporters could be a little less educated than supporters of other candidates, a feature of polling, as I have talked about in other podcasts, which will eventually fill in and diversify, and there's evidence this is already happening. But okay, Trump's people are uneducated. Well, they might have simplistic understandings of how the government works. That's true. How often have you heard supporters of this or that candidate or Democrat or Republican say, he's going to fix it, she's going to fix it, this or that? And yet, all of us in our heart of hearts know that a president can't really fix anything by himself. He has to have the support of Congress, which is dependent on the support of the people. And during a presidency, obviously, Congress is going to be subjected to at least one election, which are midpoint referenda on an administration's effort. Obama, for example, pushed through Obamacare. A lot of people thought we needed it. They used a procedural vote in a majority to ram it through. It was partisan support. And what happened? Well, he lost Congress in the process. I would say most people are out of their depth when it comes to the potential for a president to accomplish much of what he or she promises to become president in the first place. In other words, I'm going to make all kinds of promises. I'm going to get elected. I'm going to do all this stuff on day one. And then they find out that stuff is really hard to do. Does that make them authoritarians for promising to fix this, that, or the other thing? And does it make supporters of a candidate authoritarians, or does it make them aspirational? Does it make their desires aspirational? They're trying to fix their country and they want to vote for somebody who they agree with. Well, it depends on how you measure such a thing. And I would imagine what you would do is you would ask a series of questions which are highly subjectively constructed. It's a long way from asking, for example, whether you voted in the last election and all of the problems associated with that, and how likely you are to vote in this election and all the problems associated with that, and whether you are a Republican or Democrat, your age and sex and so forth. Polling is highly dependent on making sure people first, understand the questions, and second, answer them truthfully, and thirdly, that you have checks and balances in the poll to determine whether or not they're answering it and you're getting the right kinds of responses. And I mean truthful responses. And then it's a whole science or art in terms of what they're actually saying. And I guess to determine such a thing, you would want somebody who was pretty much noncommittal about which end of the political spectrum the best candidates might be. So what of McWilliams, who says that Donald Trump supporters are authoritarians? Well, this is interesting. I did some research this afternoon. McWilliams is also proprietor of a firm called McWilliams Sanders. As near as I can tell, the Sanders part is no relation to Bernie Sanders, but I don't know. Guess what they do? They do political consulting and marketing. For who and what? Well, on their website is an ad which talks about nuclear winter, done for an entity called Business Leaders for Sensible Priorities. It basically tells people to tell their presidential candidates to get rid of nuclear weapons because, quote, the Cold War is over. Another is a spot for Maryland Democrat Congressman Steny Hoyer. Another is for Chris, I guess it's Butler, mayor of Lincoln, Nebraska, also a Democrat, and for a political action group running ads against a Republican senator in Montana, and for Wisconsin Republican Congressman, actually Democrat Congressman Ron Kind. Again, another special interest group for an ad against Republican Congressman Bob Schaefer. By the way, both of the spots for Senate and for Congress cited big oil and big oil deals as reasons to get rid of these two Republicans. Both of them are the standard, really partisan, political ads. An anti-Bush ad paid for by supporters of gun control, an ad supporting Proposition 203 featuring, oddly enough, babies that supported the medical marijuana proposition, I think in, it was either Colorado or California, another ad for Democrat Marty Markowitz, who is a current New York State senator. Virtually all of the magazine ads they've done involve global warming and climate change initiatives and are clearly in favor of left-wing causes, same with the online stuff. So they're a left-wing advocacy consulting firm. And there's nothing wrong with making a living, and McWilliams is entitled to make money fighting for causes he believes in, just like anybody else. But it's important for people to know the orientation of his political consulting firm to understand the orientation of his social research work on authoritarianism. Now, you can do your own research on fascism and tyranny and authoritarianism and what it actually means. You're probably going to end up finding out what I found, that the origins of fascism in Italy and Germany are not what we have been told, and the origins of authoritarian style governments, whether it is Hugo Chavez in Venezuela or the Soviet Union, are substantially different than the United States of America and the system that we have, the federal republic, democratic republic that the United States has. What's the defense against fascism? Just off the top of your head and for fun. Well, first of all, the defense against fascism is not socialism. The defense against fascism are political movements that encourage limited government, strengthening the countervailing powers of the federal and state governments, and the strengthening of the sovereignty of the people through things like the Bill of Rights, First Amendment, Second Amendment, Fourth Amendment, and so on. Is Donald Trump an authoritarian? Well, actually, I defy anyone, including Trump, to be able to tell us with any degree of authority what he actually is or believes in. I don't think he knows. But I can tell you this. Should Trump become president, he will have to deal with Congress, the Senate, and the courts. And there's a very good possibility, given the fact that we tend to move back and forth with the Senate and the Congress, that he will be dealing with a Democrat Congress. So he's not going to go in there and start pushing buttons on day one because it may not work out that way. And as long as this bicameral House, the legislative branch, the courts and the executive branch remain countervailing, and as long as the U.S. Constitution remains the law of the land, the president's ability to act as an authoritarian will be as limited as President Obama's have been. Despite all the people talking about executive orders ruining the country and everything else, the fact is we're talking about it. The fact is the courts are looking at it. The fact is Congress is looking at it. And there are lots of solutions to that problem, up to and including impeachment and removal from office, elections and everything else. I've said, and I will continue to say, the political problem in the United States isn't our candidates. It's us, the people. There is a pronounced lack of knowledge about our own government. There is a pronounced deficiency with the ability that people have to search and find and collate information and understand its salience, find objective information, and understand their salience in regard to key issues. There is a profound lack of knowledge on political philosophy, U.S. history, and how our system actually works. And there's a profound lack lack of desire, ability, and capacity to organize and act, especially and most importantly on the right. Is this new? I don't know the answer to that question. I think some of us are beginning to see it finally. I don't know that it's new. I think this is the way the American electorate has always worked, and it's one of the reasons we have a republic and not a parliamentary democracy, which, by the way, all those countries that went fascist had some form of parliamentary democracy, which is a little different in the way it's structured. So here's how it works. First of all, you know, there is a more parliamentary political system introduced. It's one of the reasons I believe socialists advocate for a constitutional convention. Then you get a purely socialist government. Then you get power consolidated into the state, usually the federal government. This usually takes the form of an effort to establish social justice and poverty, improve medical care, establish national draft for service, improve education, improve the plight of older citizens. Lofty and actually really positive goals in the lights of most people who care about other people. Now, in our federal system, the same type of governance would be transmitted to the states, and all that entails. Or they would eliminate the states and go to some form of regional government and have a parliamentary type of government with a prime minister, although they wouldn't call it that. Once power is consolidated in the government, then what happens? Well, socialism doesn't work very well. It's part of the problem with our economics. It's part of the problem with our country right now is this idea, these ideas don't work very well. And I've done podcasts about how I believe they're trying to tack on parliamentary government and socialism into a system which is really designed for capitalism. And it just doesn't work very well. So they wouldn't be able to create a parliamentary system unless we rewrote the Constitution. In a large and powerful country like the United States, if it doesn't work very well, then you hear people demanding some kind of solution. And as the political system starts to break down, parliamentary system starts to break down, then essentially you have a full breakdown. Things don't work very well. You have a depression. You have an economic crisis or other kind of crisis. And a party emerges pledging to fix it. And this is what predicated Hitler's leadership in Germany was the Nazi Party, which he happened to be the nominal head of, or actually the head of. And then they managed to win a very large percentage of seats in the parliament. And then he became co-president and then later president, essentially chancellor. So that's what happened. Once the leader is elected, all he has to do is consolidate all the power in himself personally, which is what Hitler did, which is what Mussolini did. And then you get fascism and tyranny and all that that entails. So you'll have to decide where we are on that spectrum. Some people think we're quite far down the line, and they'll cite Obama's executive orders, and they'll cite federal government overreach and things of that nature. I tend to think we're at the beginning, and I don't know that we're even moving toward the middle or anything else. I think people are genuinely concerned about the country. We have a lot of people who want simplistic solutions. We certainly do need more understanding of libertarian-style governance. We do need to have people who can clearly advocate for these ideas that really government tends to be the problem because it tends to gum up the works and it tends to misallocate tax money and other resources. Certainly none of the Republicans and or Democrats espouse these kinds of ideas, libertarian type ideas. Rand Paul obviously comes from a libertarian background. He tends to vote like a pretty much run-of-the-mill Republican. And certainly Donald Trump does not espouse what I would consider to be libertarian ideas. But I can't find a thread running through his ideas that says political philosophy. But Donald Trump currently leads the pack. And if people vote the way the polls show, and I don't know that they will, and I just did a podcast about the possibility that the people who are vocally supporting Trump really aren't going to do, they're not going to show up to vote because we haven't seen that in some of these special elections. So that's my caveat. If people vote the way the polls show, then in fact, Donald Trump will probably lead the pack. He'll probably roll up the nomination pretty quickly. And actually, it's funny because Donald Trump actually is the thing that scares the left the most. They are terrified of a Trump candidacy. And I think it's because they can see that he can get the kind of momentum that you need to win in a general election. And that means that he would beat a Bernie Sanders or a Hillary Clinton. Beating him means that you have to turn him into a fascist. But more importantly, you have to turn his supporters into demonic fascists so that they will stay home, so that they will be afraid to defend Trump. And that's what this is all about. Why not find someone who is a left-wing political consultant to fire the opening salvo in the effort to paint Trump supporters as fascist? And then you can always transfer that over to someone like Ted Cruz if it works for you. And that's an interesting question. And, you know, if you're hearing people talk who are Trump supporters, or you're watching these candidates on the campaign trail and you're worried about authoritarianism, go back and look at the definition of the term authoritarian, relating to or favoring blind submission to authority, of relating to or favoring a concentration of power in a leader or an elite not constitutionally responsible to the people. Does that describe the American political process in any way, shape, or form? No, this is really an effort to paint supporters as fascists without having to say it. Thanks once again to Ex-Government Trucks for sponsoring the Bob Davis podcast. Don't forget, they got the fleet-maintained government vehicles. They get them all ready for you. So if you need a work truck, if you need a van, an SUV, Ford, Chevy, Dodge, Toyotas, and more, visit Ex-Government Trucks Mega Truck Center, now open in Forest Lake, Minnesota, 356 19th Street. And yeah, they still got the great ex-government cars out at Forest Lake. So we're talking Crown Vicks, Chargers, and everything else. I've had three of them, and now I have the Ford Super Duty 2000 ambulance, which I'm loving that diesel smell and keeping it ready to go. And I can't wait to get back out on the road. So thanks, Ed, for doing that. Don't forget the peace of mind guarantee and financing for all credit levels. Xgovernmenttrucks.com.
Xgovernmenttrucks.com.
Thanks again to Ryan Plumbing for sponsoring the Bob Davis podcast. Once again, for emergency service, I got to turn that water back on. 651-224-4771 in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. Residential and business quality replacement and repair of all plumbing, heating, and air conditioning systems. They can help you out if you have an emergency. 651-224-4771 in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488, or check them out online at ryanplumbing.com. And you can click on the banner at the top of the Bob Davis podcast page, and it will take you to their page as well. Thanks to this month's digital sponsor of the BobDavisPodcast.com. Say that fast, really, three times. I don't know if I could say it fast three times, and I wrote it. If you're a pilot and you want to be safe on takeoffs and landings, Alpha Systems makes the revolutionary angle of attack indicator. The bottom line is Alpha saves lives, and it's FAA approved. Click on the Alpha Systems banners at the top of the Bob Davis Podcast page for more info about Alpha's revolutionary angle of attack indicator at the Bob Davis Podcast. Thanks for listening to the Bob Davis Podcast on Stitcher.com, iTunes, TuneIn, BlogTalkRadio.com, Google Play. Thanks for listening to the Bob Davis Podcast radio show on GCNLive.com and on the radio. Really appreciate the likes and the shares and favoriting and following me on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. I'm BDavis7843 on Instagram. And thanks especially for your donations at thebobdavispodcast.com for Mobile Podcast Command. I am so excited because I'm just chomping at the bit right now. We're so close to actually heading out to cover the caucuses at the very end of January. Probably going to leave. I don't know. I haven't decided yet. It depends on what events I cover. Hopefully the first will be the presidential debate on the 28th in Des Moines. If not, I might just go down and sit in the parking lot. I haven't decided yet. So thanks for your donations. It's going into diesel fuel and Komodo Dragon coffee and beef jerky for the trip. It's going to be a long one. We're going to Iowa. Then we're going through the Mid-South. Then we're going to South Carolina and Georgia and Florida, going all the way to the Keys, coming back up the west coast of Florida through the Redneck Riviera, through Louisiana, Texas, and then back up to Minneapolis and St. Paul. It's going to be an amazing trip, and it's going to be a great way sort of to look at the country on the eve of during the primary elections and on the eve of the presidential election in 2016. And it opens the 2016 campaign coverage. And thanks for your contributions to do that. You guys have been sending me, it's been great. Thanks, Nate. Thanks, John. Thanks, Sean. And many, many more. And thanks for listening to podcast 457.